Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Jerry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
I'm Hideo.
I am the chef owner of many of Seattle's fine restaurants, including the one that we happen to be in, which is Lola. We're upstairs at Lola right now in the Hot Stove Society. And we are thrilled to be here. We have no audience today. We didn't know if we were going to... Or actually right next to Hot Stove, we have the junior camp, the kids' cooking camp here, all week long.
I heard their cute little voices as I was walking up the stairs. I was like, oh, they're going to learn so much.
Oh, yeah. And with Chef Bridget yesterday, you know, I showed up to do something for my class that's coming up on Thursday, and I said, she said, oh, come talk to the kids. I said, the kids don't know who I am. And I said, they're fine. They're doing just great. It's like... Oh, really? They've been dying to see you, blah, 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 blah. So I went over and said, hey, kids. And they all looked at me like, are you some sort of creeper that's coming around my class? We have no idea who this guy is. And then anyway, they were having a good time.
Well, good.
Yeah.
That's great. Would you know anything about what they're learning today?
Today, I know they were making themselves pancakes for breakfast.
Perfect.
You know, as we do here, we tend to make our meals.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, they made four kinds of breads. Which is kind of
they're making crepes,
focaccia, and they're making crepes, and they're doing all sorts of things. It's 5 hours, it's 9 to 2, I want to say, and they're having a blast.
What a great deal! Yeah, what a deal for parents. They get to offload their kids for 5 hours, and then they get bread.
I know they went home with all sorts of treats yesterday,
totally
for the fam.
Mm-hmm.
We have a large show for you today. We're bringing back the Hot Stove Society tasting panel to take on vanilla. Last week we talked about. Not really knowing which vanilla had the best flavor. So today we have five different vanillas, and we're going to taste them all. There's some, like just the normal kind of vanilla extract that you might get at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this Nielsen Massey vanilla, and we have it from three different countries. So it's going to be, you know, the interesting thing is these Nielsen Massey is like double, if not triple, the price of the regular. I think it's about double. So
let's see if it's doubly delicious.
I know exactly. That's what I want to know. And then when you look at it, you say, oh, do I want Madagascar? Do I want Tahitian? Do I want Mexican? It's like, how do you know what you want? And at $35 a bottle, you
make decision at that price.
So, and then we're going to taste it against just plain old vanilla beans.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because I think people don't often recognize what a terrific ingredient that is. We're going to make delicious ice cream and sorbet with Dahlia pastry chef Brittany Bartolet, but not literally, figuratively.
Oh, that's too bad. I could have gone for some delicious sorbet and ice cream today.
Well, yeah, but you don't want to make your listeners jealous.
And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. It's a very exciting day. I miss our audience, though.
Me too.
Does this mean we don't get a breakfast sandwich this morning?
I hope not.
I think you own the bakery. We can figure something out.
Yeah, we're going to have to call the Dahlia Bakery.
And by the way, Tom, it's Bastille Day today.
That's the fantastic.
And we're doing a celebration at Luc. The streets is closed, and we have a band playing, and we're just going to have a buffet. And come on down if you want to have a little family gathering and have a little entertainment and some fun in the sun.
Are you going to be grilling? You usually grill.
I'm
going to
grill some chicken outside on the barbecue.
A little poulet.
Awesome. Poulet.
Poulet with mustard, no doubt.
That's right.
Delish.
All right. Ordinary to extraordinary. Take us down the path.
Yes. Let's go. It is national holiday, ordinary to extraordinary. The first one up, mac and cheese. How do you take an ordinary mac and cheese and make it extraordinary?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the fromage is very important. Use a good fromage, as in probably some Comté would be one of my favorite things to use. A cheese which has a little bite, but not as much as Parmesan. I think Parmesan is a little bit too strong for mac and cheese.
Boy, yeah, you're just wrong on that one.
That's possible. I've been wrong before.
I'm willing to admit
to be wrong, but I like Comté. I think it's a very nice across-the-board cheese. And... very light. You know, some people make bechamel to go with their mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of putting more cheese and less bechamel, mainly because I'm not into adding thickener to my pasta. I just like to keep it as simple as possible and just put more grated cheese, you know, and lots of fresh herb on top. Done.
So no Velveeta for you?
No. Actually, no Velveeta ever for me.
Ever? Okay, well.
There is enough cheese on this planet to not have Velveeta.
I'll just say one more thing, and then we'll move on to the next, which is it's a great time to clean out your cheese drawer, right? A lot of people have a little deli drawer in their fridge, and they keep the meats and cheese in. It's a great time to take all the ends. If you got brie, cut the mold off the outside and then use the center of the brie, camembert. If you've got goat cheese, it's a great time to use a little fresh goat cheese. Grate your
and
cheese,
all those
Parmesan
rinds.
End, grind all the way down to the waxy end of the Parmesan. And then mix it all together. The other thing I would say is I disagree a little bit on the bechamel. I like that as a base. I used to always kind of try and bake my mac and cheese after.
Yeah.
It does not work, right? It dries out. The pasta soaks up all the moisture.
Pasta is already cooked. You don't
I know.
Need to
so
bake
you really
it
just got to toss the pasta at the last second and into your cheese sauce and then serve. Boom.
And
done.
Make a
Boom.
Very thick
just
cheese
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you want something crispy, just toast up some breadcrumbs maybe.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The way to
throw
do
some
that.
Panko on top and put under the broiler for
or fry, an, fry a spring roll and put a spring roll in your mac and cheese.
I don't
or
see
even,
why you would.
Even better, make small croutons, saute them in olive oil and toss them in your pasta at the last minute.
Okay. One last one before we cut to break. On the 16th, it's Corn Fritter Day. I love corn fritters. Tom, do you want to take this one?
Sure. I like corn fritters, too, but I like to mix some seafood in with them. It makes it feel very Southern New Orleans kind of to me. So I'll buy. It's a good time to buy like a pound of those crawfish tails that sometimes you see at a fish market.
Yum.
I never buy that stuff, but that would be a good place for it because they're not trying to live on their own.
Right.
Actually, they're fresh. You can buy them fresh right now.
That would be unusual. But the pound picked bag, you know, they're not, I wouldn't say the greatest product. Like, I would always have fresh crab over that. But this is a great place to use them. And then add some of your sambal oleg, that little spicy chili paste to your corn batter.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a spicy crayfish corn fritter. And I think that sounds
I'm into
lovely.
That.
A little
that
slaw on the side.
Or a little green goddess would be good with that.
Yeah.
Little,
All right. I'm sold. I'm sold on
Maybe
this
even
idea.
Harissa would work.
Do we have time for a really quick one more? Sean's saying yes.
All right.
All right. What about a daiquiri? It's National Daiquiri Day on the 19th.
How would you make a daiquiri better? Well, just use good booze. That would be the basis of, like any drink, any, you know, don't use the well, but use a good rum. Good.
Is there a problem with that in the way that you think about that? So, for example, let's say instead of using a Bacardi rum, just a plain silver Bacardi rum.
Right.
And now all of a sudden you're using Mount Gay or using a fancy rum. Do you really still have what you're looking for in the daiquiri? You know what I'm saying?
You're right.
Is it always better to use better ingredients?
Sometimes there's too much mixture to add some greatness to that.
Uh-huh.
A great rum is great on the side with an ice cube.
So I was just curious. Like sometimes you can overdo it, and then it's not really what you were looking for, fresh. It's like a strawberry margarita. You just want really kind of trashy margarita mix.
Sure do.
And fresh strawberries.
Sure do. Right now, as a matter of fact.
All right, coming up, we're going to make a meal out of what's in your fridge, and that is kind of what's left over in your fridge on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And we're going to do a little segment called What's in Your Fridge. And there's some folks that are nice enough to actually open their fridge, take a picture, or send us a list.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's about the intention, I would say, was for leftovers, right? This isn't after you go to the grocery store, do a full shop, and anyone can cook from that. Our goal is to teach you how to take what's left over and make something interesting out of it. So.
Or say you buy a 6-pack of chicken thighs and you've still got 2 left. What are you going
to
do with them? So, yes, it's cobbling together the last
little dog.
Yeah, the little bibs and bobs from the fridge to make something delicious.
What do you
and
suppose
use
that
everything.
Saying came from, bibs and bobs?
Bibs and bobs?
Sounds very British.
It does sound a little bit like it could be from the UK.
Coming from an Issaquah girl, it just doesn't seem...
Listen,
I've never heard that term.
I'm more than just a person from Issaquah. But let's move on to more interesting topics. Like,
let's have some bibs and bobs.
Bibs and bobs from people's fridges. We have Kay Robin Egger, who has been generous enough to share what's in there. So... for all of these, I will say that we're just going to assume that you have a fairly normal built-out pantry, right? All the condiments and the staples that you might find.
Mustard, sauces, rubs.
Yeah, Terry, what do you got? Do you got anything that you're selling these days?
Moroccan spice rub.
A Moroccan spice rub. Okay, we've got all those things in the pantry. But in her fridge right now, she's got chicken thighs, funny enough, sweet peppers, carrots, and homemade yogurt, as well as some Rainier cherries. And then she's got some dry goods as well, potatoes, onions, that sort of thing.
Did you say homemade yogurt?
Homemade yogurt.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Got homemade yogurt in there, yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Well, first thing I would do,
I'll
jump on this fridge, is get that yogurt into a piece of cheesecloth or into a piece of paper towel and get it draining because I want to make a thick, creamy yogurt sauce. And that's, you know, the Greek yogurt is so popular now. That's because some of the moisture has been strained off of it. Mm-hmm. But even that yogurt has plenty of water left to go. So I would take that, and if I had some garlic around or some green onions, I'd put it right into that yogurt. I'd stir it up and then put it in my strainer so that it just drains. And I'd do that if you can. I'm not sure what time dinner starts, but if you have an opportunity to do that in the morning or the night before, that would be awesome.
Right, 24 right? hours would be good.
Now you end up with this beautiful, thick, cheesy yogurt. And we're going to take the chicken thighs, and we're going to just make a spicy rub for them. Chef Bartleben's here. We're going to make a spicy rub for them out of cayenne pepper, paprika, some dried herbs that you might have in your pantry, and we're just going to do that. And what I love about the chicken thighs is that I'm assuming she's my kind of gal that skin's on the chicken thighs.
Oof. Oh, yeah. It does to
I
be.
Mean,
because now we're going to go into our cast iron pan with that rub, and we're going to go on medium heat.
Medium
because if you go on high, you're going to crisp it and burn the skin before and the rub before it cooks, right?
Right.
But I want to go on medium heat, and I want to just keep it there. And I want to cook it three quarters of the way through on the skin side. And that's where you get that kind of crunchy, crackling type
Yum.
Skin, right? And then you just turn it over on the meat side, assuming that it's a boneless chicken thigh, and you finish it off, and you're done. So we got that thick yogurt sauce as a base with garlic and green onion. Then we got the spicy chicken thigh on top. And then we're just going to take whatever veggies she has and make either a summer slaw, a little chop-chop salad, something of that nature.
Rainier cherries, I would pit them and then make a quick... While you're cooking your chicken legs on the barbecue, I would take...
I already did this fridge. You got a new fridge, buddy.
Okay, sorry. I was just... You didn't use the Rainier cherries. I was trying to use them.
We can
you
use
ate them all
in the
already.
Next fridge. Cherry monster. All right. Terry, this one's for you. This is from Gail Good Tribers, and she's got, lucky for Gail, Dungeness crab caught today, she says, fresh basil and cilantro, Logan berries and cherries, champagne, and Sauvignon Blanc. That's a nice
Well,
fridge.
I'll definitely drink the champagne.
That's a Northwest fridge right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, sure is.
Well, I'm going to extend that. She probably has some onions, too, and she probably has...
all the pantry staples.
All the pantry staples. So I would take some white onions and do a quick pickle of white vinegar, tiny bit of sugar, and then blend and put those onions in there while you're taking your crab and making a crab. I'm just going to make a crab salad. And we were talking about, watermelon in the summertime. Use watermelon, make a watermelon and Dungeness crab salad with a little bit of... where you talk about soft cheeses too, a little bit of creme fraiche, tarragon, mix the whole thing together, and then use those pickled onion right on top of that, and fresh herb.
Yep, she's got basil and cilantro.
Here we go. Use the basil. I'll stick away from the cilantro for this one.
And lucky for you, she's got cherries too. Did you want to use the cherries in anything?
Oh, yes. I'll make a cherry clafoutis just for next dessert.
Okay.
Next dessert.
Sounds lovely.
Just pit your cherries and make a nice cherry clafoutis, which is basically flour, eggs, sugar, milk. And then it's kind of like a flan idea. And then you put that in a cast iron pan, throw all your cherries in there, pit it or not. If you don't have time to pit them, it's actually my grandmother never pitted cherries when I was a kid.
Why, does she just hate you kids? She's one
no,
trying to choke you to death?
She just didn't have time. She was like putting the cherries. She already picked the cherries. She was like, that's good enough. You guys can throw the pizza
I think she
around.
Was trying to choke you to death.
That might have been one of the reasons, but...
All right, Tom, are you ready for
yes.
another fridge? This one comes from Alexei Rozov, and it's broccoli half and half, mozzarella cheese, coconut butter, and deli ham meat.
That was a little bit left field there. Coconut milk and...
Coconut butter.
Coconut butter.
Butter.
Which I'm going to put into a pan, and I'm going to char. I'm going to char the broccoli. I love a good hard-seared broccoli. Mm. So you take the crown and you cut it in half lengthwise, all the way down the stalk, and then you're going to put those like steaks into that hot coconut butter, and we're just going to let them sit there and just turn almost black. And I like that flavor. It's not unlike, say, putting it in the oven and roasting it, but this is only one side. And then tell me again the rest of that. You went so fast.
Half and half.
Half and half.
Mozzarella cheese, coconut butter, and ham deli meat.
Yeah. So after the broccoli is charred, we're going to wrap it in the ham deli meat. Oh, it's going to be so fancy. And then we're going to...
This is real fancy.
And then we're going to put slices of mozzarella on top of that and put it under the broiler and brown it like a broccoli ham pizza, except without the totally gluten dough.
Crustless pizza.
Yeah. Broccoli ham roll-up.
And the half and half we're going to save for her coffee in the morning.
Okay. Fair enough.
She's going to need it after
dinner. All right. Terry, you've only got 2 minutes, so you've got to do this one pretty quick here. It's Janice Bridges' Rainier Cherries, bread, butter, yogurt, eggs, milk, sparkling rosé, basil, and mint. What are you going to do with that?
I'll make a quick omelette, grate some cheese in it, and I'll use the pickled cherries on the side to make a nice little salad. Not pickled, I'm sorry. Just pitted cherry, cut in small pieces, add a little honey, put some more fresh herbs in there, and then you
have basil and mint.
And then have a little omelette and some fresh cherry salad next to it. Done. That was less than a minute, by the way.
So one of the things, the problem with Rainier cherries to me is when you pluck them, you seed them, you slice them, they turn brown so quickly.
Yeah, that's what you have to
do. So what?
That's why you have to use them right away as a salad right away and eat them right away. Your dash of vinegar will work really well. A little bit of, if you have orange juice and lemon juice, you do 3/4 of orange juice, 1/4 lemon. Put that with it. That will also help keep the oxidation away and keep the, also change the format of that sweet, sweet cherry to a little bit of more like an acid.
A little perky.
I'm going to argue with the chef on this one for a second. Is that okay?
Okay, sure, please.
Dude, they have no flavor to begin with. And now you've put orange, lemon, and vinegar?
Okay, so can I rephrase that? That's because you're not buying the right Rainier. I have had the most unbelievable Rainier cherry from my farmer outside of Mount Vernon.
I know, but that's just you because you're special. But
no,
by the way, the rest of us poor souls.
They were beautiful Rainier. No, Rainier cherry can be delicious. You just have to wait and pick them at the right time.
Okay, fine. You've been listening to us on Cairo Radio from the Hot Stove Society on 97.3 FM. We are back in the Seattle kitchen. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rojiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And it's time for Food in the News. And, you know, I kind of left the last segment sort of dreading coming into this segment about boneless chicken wings. It's like, I like a good chicken wing. Who doesn't like a good chicken wing?
What's the, how do you, first of all, is like, who debones a wing too?
Well, probably you, because you debone everything.
No, I do not debone
a wing. Oh, come on. You're like Mr. Fussy on chicken.
I know, but I like to suck on the wing and get those two bones out. I mean, that's the pleasure of having a bone.
Okay.
But there's a lot of people out there that do not like meat on the bone. I've encountered them, some of them close friends even, who work in the food industry.
So what's wrong with these people that they can't just eat like a chicken breast instead? Why do they have to have the wing meat?
That's a really great question. I'm not sure, but I'm sure when you go to a place like, I'm just going to name it, I don't know this for a fact, but like a Buffalo Wild Wings, they're serving a large population of both wing and non-wing eaters, and they probably, instead of calling them chicken tenders, call them boneless wings. That's what I'm going to guess.
Well, you know why they do that.
Why do they do that?
Because chicken wings are expensive, and there's a shortage of them.
Yeah, you only get
two. People love chicken wings.
You only get two per bird, and they're not very big. So
they do try to promote boneless chicken wings, which is just breast meat, because it's actually cheaper. Can you imagine? It's like baby back spare ribs.
So wait, they're calling them wings, but they're actually tenders?
Well, they're calling them boneless chicken wings, but it's actually just a slice of chicken breast.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so the point
that
being is that
false
they
advertising.
Well, they try to that is kind of false.
Well, that is part of the question.
But, and I don't know that that's a fact. I better take that back because. But I think that that is the way that the reason they came up with those is they needed more meat to sell other than the wings. The wings are not only more expensive, but they're more rare.
Right.
I definitely like this theory. We got this article from Bon Appetit magazine. This is where this conversation started, and ultimately, the boneless wing is kind of a little bit of an amalgam of pieces, not unlike your nugget, you know, a chicken nugget. And so a question on top of all of this, you know, is should they be calling them wings?
I would say I don't care.
Okay.
I just wouldn't order them.
I thought this was going ultimately.
I wouldn't go there to eat
but
chicken
just,
wings either.
You know, just to, like to double check.
I just wouldn't order them, I guess. You know, it's like, what the hey? You know, it used to be chicken wings were like a throwaway, and they were cheaper than everything. And now that they've become super popular, now it's like baby backs, like I was saying. If you look at a baby back rib right now, it's between $3.99 and $5.99 a pound. The pork loin itself, like the 100% meat pork loin, it's like $2.99 a pound. It used to be just the opposite. And now when you see the baby backs, they're cut much thicker. It used to be they were cut right to the bone because the pork loin was worth more.
Right.
Now they leave some of that pork loin on the baby back ribs to weight them out because they're getting more money for the ribs.
Right.
It's
look at
just
that.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Economics.
Economics.
All right. Let's move on to the next article. Curious to get your thoughts on it because you both own restaurants around the town. Sarah Huckabee Sanders joins list of top Trump aides confronted at restaurants. I'm sure you heard the story. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard the story. But she went into the Red Hen and was asked, I think, relatively politely to leave, but obviously for political reasons. Let's get your thoughts on this as this story was happening.
You want my thoughts?
Yeah, I do.
I think it's nonsense. You sat her in the restaurant, treat her like a human being, and feed her. She's paying her bill, and I just think it's nonsense. And if you want to make a political statement, make it someplace else. Make it, you know, stand outside with a sign or whatever you have to do. But I think that we would never do that in one of our restaurants. Now, I will say I've had calls for reservations from, for example, David Duke called. He's a famous white supremacist, right? I wouldn't take the reservation. Now, if he had gotten into the restaurant and sat down and was eating, would I have kicked him out? No. But when my team called me and said, you know, this guy's making a reservation, I said, no, we're not going to take that reservation.
Yeah.
You know, what if I had a person on the floor of color that, you know, I had to wait on them? Or, you know, it just was would be very uncomfortable.
It's wrong. If you know it ahead, it's wrong.
But I just also think that if we're going to go down that road, if I'm not going to, you know, entertain or break bread with my political opposites, then
there won't be any
conversation.
There's
no conversation, and that's not healthy.
Exactly.
I mean, we certainly didn't like it when, you know, gay couples get denied the right to have a wedding cake, for example.
Right.
It's along those same lines.
Yeah.
Terry, any other thoughts?
No, I'm 100% with Tom on this one. I think it's, you know, they're in a restaurant. They're just, to me, they're a customer. My political view doesn't go into affecting this. You know, they want to come and have dinner. You just charge them the same price as everybody else. But when they leave, you can go on the sidewalk and tell them your opinion.
There you go. All right. The next article is about Chef Edward Lee. You guys know Chef Edward Lee?
I don't.
He's a pretty famous guy. He's been on Top Chef, The Mind of a Chef, which is a great little docuseries on Netflix. And he's coming out with a book, and it's all about the story of American food. So it's not a big, glossy cookbook, but more of an actual story about the history of dishes all around the country. And so it brings up the question for the both of you, what is American food to you? In terms of what do you think of as quintessential American cuisine?
What is brought into this country by every foreigner that have ever stepped ground in here. That's what American food is all about.
Yeah, that is what American food is all about.
Most of the American food is recipes that are coming from the old land of either side of the globe, Asia or Europe. I mean, it's like you look at everywhere, whether it's the South or whether it's, you know, anywhere. Here in Seattle, I mean, we have the perfect example of how much influence we've gotten from foreigners and immigrants. So I think it's, you know, the real, what is the true, people ask me that question all the time, what's a true Seattle food? And I go, well, what's local and what's in season? That's what every chef in town plays with. You know, and that, to me, I think that's the pride. That's why I love the product here, and that's why I stayed here as a chef. It's because I love the local resource that we have. And that's, you know, probably true for the guy who lives in the South. He's very happy. You know, more and more of that is surfacing everywhere around the country. Those young chefs who are looking for local and seasonal food. And I think that's a beautiful trademark. I don't think it's defined by just one thing or two. The South happens to have a little bit older of a life than the rest of the country. So is the East Coast. And therefore, they have a little bit more of those traditional dishes. But
well, I think Mr. Lee recognizes that. And he considers a Jewish deli American food. I mean, it's not Israeli food. It's not, you know, Jews come from all over the globe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think he recognizes that and puts that in his book.
Yeah.
I mean, at least that's my opinion about how I read the foreword to his book and And I think it's an interesting concept. And it's defining in that I think sometimes like a pastrami sandwich gets bastardized, right? What is real pastrami sandwich?
Right.
Does it really have sauerkraut? And I mean, from the, what is the classic version of a pastrami sandwich, which in my mind is Jewish rye, a deli rye, pastrami and mustard, and that's it. You know, so when it gets dressed up with lettuce and tomatoes and blah, 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 is that real American pastrami sandwich or real Jewish?
So I think it's an updated version from somebody. Yeah, for sure.
Here's another question that's on my mind because I've taken a dip back into some of Michael Pollan's writing. And so do you conceive of the westernized diet as part of American cuisine and our contribution to the world at large? And when I bring that up, I mean specifically a lot of processed food.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, a lot of other countries attribute that being brought into their countries as an American construct.
Hmm. Well, if you try to cook Chinese, you're cooking with canned foods. I mean, canned vinegars, canned water chestnut.
Oyster
I mean, everything.
Sauces.
Everything. They use a lot of canned mushrooms or dried mushrooms. And then the only thing fresh really is the one ingredient, like broccoli.
Right.
You know, but if I don't know. I think that that's a little bit of an understatement. I think wars have always kind of led the way in processed food.
I agree.
Of what we needed to get to feed the troops all over the
migration.
World. And that's the same with happened with things like corned beef, right? That was done to get onto the boats to go explore the oceans.
Spam. Spam is
World
a perfect
War II.
Example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A cheese from Washington State, you know, was done, put in a can for wartime.
Oh, man. But is that cheese not so delicious?
Yeah, good.
Big fan. Big fan of that. And the last thing in Food in the News is Julia Child's birthday.
Hey. Oh.
Yes. August 15th. Is that correct?
I believe it's August 15th here at the Hot Stove. We did it last year as kind of a strollabout, trying to just celebrate the woman and who she was. We always have her videos up and just kind of enjoy the memories of Julia. It's odd for me a little bit. Terry, probably for you too. We knew her personally and cooked with her and ate dinners with her and blah, blah, blah. And it's funny to kind of celebrate that. I wonder, like, at some point, will Tony Bourdain be in that boat?
He will definitely
Will Jacques Pepin be in that boat where we celebrate the entire life of a character? She was a real food character. So August 15th, it's $50. It's not super expensive. And we'll have 10 or 12 food stations. You'll stroll about. We'll drink some bubbly. She loved bubbly.
And with butter, it's always better.
Yes, exactly. She loved butter. In moderation. Yeah. The only thing good about moderation is moderation of moderation.
That's right.
So anyways, Julia Child, look for it at the HotStoveSociety.com site. We'd love to have a stroll about with you. It'd be fun to come down and enjoy summer, and we do this every August. Coming up next is how to host a dinner party, unlike the ones that we usually throw with you, where we're just slaves in your kitchen.
That's right.
How to host a dinner party and also enjoy it. Super, super fun.
Absolutely.
Not just being drudgery of dishes and drama. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
.com.
It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're thankful that you've joined us today. We're here at the Hot Stove Society, and we're going to have a dinner party, but unlike our usual dinner party. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And Katie, so we were reading this article about how to host a dinner party.
That's right.
And the things that can make life good about it. And also, it struck me when I was reading it, you know, dinner is such an obvious place. We earlier in the show we talked about would we let Sarah Sanders or somebody, essentially the argument is a political opposite into our restaurants, whether it's right or left. And in my opinion, no. I'm in the hospitality business. I would welcome them into the restaurant unless it was an organic distaste, like for me, a Ku Klux Klan leader or a racist or something. But politics. To me, in my mind, I can move the two in my head because, to me, I want to keep open the conversation. If I disagree with somebody, I want to chat with them.
Exactly.
I want to get to know why they feel the way they do, and I want them to know how I feel and why.
And I think there is no better place to do it than around the table.
So, exactly my point on this little dinner party conversation about the little things you can do to make your dinner party more fun and why it's important to invite people over for dinner.
Right,
and to sit down and break bread with people.
I actually thought about the both of you the other day because we've had this discussion before. And on the 4th of July, we live in an apartment complex. One of our neighbors invited many people from the building over for Eggs Benedict. They were the most delicious Eggs Benedict, and it was a great chance to meet the neighbors and mix and mingle with people that we otherwise kind of see in passing, but don't really often have the chance to have the conversation. I thought that was quite gracious of them to host.
And what'd you get out of it?
What did we get out of it? Well, we got to know our building a little bit better, which was, you know, when you live in a small space like that, I think it's important to know your neighbor. It's important to be a good neighbor. And I think that's easier to do when you humanize the person next door or down the hall or underneath you or above you. I think you're a little bit more conscientious of that. And also, you know, you have each other's back in a funny way. It's kind of nice to think that I could go next door now and ask for a cup of sugar. Kind of
which
that
you
old,
could have before.
Which I could have before, but
breaking bread with them is now it's a different layer.
It's a very different level. Yeah. Breaking bread is, I think, is a very big door. It's a big opening door. And it's true around the world. On my last e-newsletters and I wrote for the restaurants, I mentioned, you know, Bourdain's passing away, and I said, to me, the message that I love so much from him is the fact that you can go anywhere around the world and have a meal with someone. You know, and no big shishi, is just a meal. And, you know, to me, the final phrase of that was, call your neighbor and invite them for a meal. You know, invite your neighbor for a meal. And it doesn't have to be fancy. It's just a breaking bread together. And I think that is the peace of the world.
Well, and that's the first point from the New York Times is mix up your guest list. So that is that means, you know, not just the people that you're closest to that you already know, but get some new people in the mix as well. Maybe they invite friends.
Do you think that would be important to go races? Like if you don't know any Chinese people, or invite over a Chinese person? Or do you think that's more intended to be political? Like,
I think it could really be anything, honestly.
Yeah. All at the same time?
You could. If you were so bold enough to do that, I think that that's a great idea. I mean, a lot of people in this country maybe don't know a Muslim family. Maybe invite a Muslim family over, you know? There's so many ways that you can do it, and I think all of them are good as long as your intentions are there.
Now, do you have to be careful of if you have a right-wing friend that hates Muslims? Which, that's too esoteric probably. But
well, I think
you don't want to get into a strident kind of
argument. You don't
want
to get into a strident argument. But I think that if you invite people over where everyone understands the context in which they're being invited, which is
everyone. I know, that was silly where I went with that.
And also, I think you're the one controlling the crowd. I mean, it's your house. You control the crowd. Meaning that if somebody gets out of hand, you have to call them on it. You have to go, hey, we're here to have a good time. This is not the place, not the moment. You know what I mean? It's like, this is not what this is about.
Hopefully, most people would never get to that spot.
Correct.
They've been guests in
some
house.
People get, you know, when they get drinking or whatever, sometimes they lose their...
Yeah. Okay.
Excuse me.
But you are the one in charge.
The next one is know your repertoire. You don't maybe have to be the best cook, but know your capabilities. What do you think about that?
Absolutely.
Well, we often talk on the show about owning a dish, right? And that's when I would pull that out. It's not the time to practice.
Right.
The real reason for that is you don't want to embarrass yourself, and you don't want to add more stress. You've already inviting 10 people over to your house. Right. That's stressful for many people. I could do that with my eyes closed.
Same as
the
first date. It's the same exact thing on the first date. You get enough pressure going on. You don't want to add more to the table.
So I know if I went to Katie's house and she was having 10 people over for dinner, I'd have spatchcock or roast chicken. I know she loves to make that dish, right?
We'd have a couple of chickens
We'd
out
have
there.
A couple of chickens.
Yes. I'd at least know that much.
But you're proud of that dish, and you feel like you can compete in the world marketplace as a great chicken.
I don't think I'm going to disappoint anyone with a roasted chicken. That's for
if
sure.
If you wanted to pick an area where you made something new, where would it be? Would it be in the salad range, or would it be in dessert?
No, I love salads. Desserts would be a thing. But you know what would be a challenge for me would be utilizing the grill in a smoking method or something timed like a paella. I've never done a paella on an open flame, and that would make me a little bit anxious. I don't know that I would do that on a...
And yet it's a dish you don't make for one.
Exactly. All right, the next one is, should you not have the skills to pay the bills? Cheese is a crowd pleaser. Everyone likes cheese.
Yeah, cheese
platters.
And maybe...
So you're saying a cheese because it's inexpensive?
No, not because it's... No, the skills. The skills to pay the
skills.
Bills.
Oh, the skills.
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't want to test yourself on an app, so you're just going to butt out a cheese course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't mind taking breaks.
Yeah. And you know,
salami, slice.
And yeah, everyone likes a beautifully organized cheese.
Cold cuts
plate.
And cheese is always a nice, and some garnishes to it. It's always
crudités.
A nice.
Yeah.
Any tips? Any tips on the cheese platter? No. Okay. Break out the vinyl. A lot of people don't maybe have a record player in the full setup, but I think the idea is
music.
Set it to some music. Set it to a soundtrack.
Set a mood.
Either I think personally, when I'm doing a dinner party, I'd rather have Pandora or something like that, where I have a playlist that I'm comfortable with, and it just continues. So you don't have to, there's plenty of things to think about when you're entertaining.
We're going
to
move you to Spotify, but I understand. And then the final one
is. Do you
hate
Pandora?
What's that?
Do you hate Pandora?
Kinda.
I didn't know that.
Well, sorry, I guess Pandora's not sponsoring this show. And then the last one is be a relaxed host or hostess. Any final thoughts on that?
Yes. I think it's important because if you're not, you're going to create tension amongst your guests. They're going to feel like they want to be. If you're tense, they're going to feel like, well, why, you know, why is he tense and where is he and what am I doing? You know, so it's all in the prep. And also have them participate. If you have a little bit more to do than you thought, just have your guests help you. Mm-hmm. You know, they're your friend. They're not like people you don't know. So put them in.
Yeah, to me, there's a couple of things you can do to feel really good about and relax. One is a little host gift. Mm-hmm. Like you have something canned or a little something that you bought for each of your guests. Mm-hmm. I think is really fun. Typically, they're going to bring a little hostess gift, right? Mm-hmm. So a little gift exchange. Or plan out a couple of games, things that are appropriate over the table so that they're conversation starters. I don't know which ones I would use off the top of my head.
Food for thought, tasty trivia.
Yeah, food for thought games. Let's do a little trivia at the table and just kind of break the ice. Don't expect people to just sit down and not haven't mingled, right?
Right.
Have your wines picked out, right? A simple red and a simple white and a simple rosé, the best way to go. Right. Always champagne or sparkling makes a great introduction. So just little things like that to be more relaxed rather than just personally being relaxed. Okay. Phew, now we've just thrown an incredible dinner party. Let's jump into the Hot Stove Society's tasting panel on vanilla extract, coming up next on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. Thanks for hanging through that long break with us. We're always happy to be here for a second hour. We've still got many things to go, including a vanilla bean taste test or a vanilla extract taste test. We have some Seattle food icons we're going to talk about. And Brittany Bartleben's going to be here to talk sorbet and ice cream and how to make the most out of your summer fruits.
Yum.
Seems like the perfect time of year for all those types of things. And, of course, bringing up the rear is Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. So I intend fully on showing up today for my Food for Thought.
As opposed to all those times you just sleep on three.
We'll be with you,
Tom. I'm showing up, dude.
We'll be with you. Don't worry.
Vanilla taste test. Let's start there.
Yes.
You know, we talked last week on the show about trying to figure out which vanilla to buy. It's an expensive proposition. You know, when I bought them at the Ballard Market this morning, the regular kind of what we would consider typical vanilla extract, the McCormick's, or this is simply organic or whatever, is about $6 an ounce. The other ones that I bought, all the Nielsen Massey, which kind of changed the marketplace maybe 10, 15 years ago, bringing more strong, more vanilla-y vanilla extract to the marketplace, just a better quality, is about double the price.
Right.
So it's not inexpensive, but it's also one of the things we do with our tasting panel is trying to decide, is it worth it,
right?
Is it worth the price? So, Terry, why don't you start us off? You tasted through our control unit.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say about vanilla, there's been a crisis in the weather in Madagascar that has created a very high influx of prices, of not influx, but of rising of prices. So what used to be $35 a pound is now $75 a pound. So that is one of the main reasons vanilla extract is so expensive, and vanilla in general is very expensive. And to me, my train of belief in that is if you're going to buy something that's expensive, buy and try to find the best. And I'm a big fan of vanilla bean, period. Extract is great, but vanilla bean, keep it in the freezer and use them and cut them in half and get those specks out, will give you, to me, over any extract, a lot more flavor. And that's my belief.
Mm-hmm.
That's my experience. So I go with that to start. Uh-huh. However, in the testing of the four bottles that we tried, the extract, my least favorite was the, what do you call that one? The natural.
The simply organic. It's just a regular vanilla extract that I grew up with. Yeah. My mom used that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
It's just way, way too alcoholic. There's alcohol in there.
It's harsh. Wet,
very harsh. Yeah. And it doesn't reflect vanilla for me. You would have to use a lot in a flan or anything to make the pleasant taste of vanilla bean. My out of the other three.
So the other three, let me just be clear. We have Tahitian, Madagascar, and Mexican. And I'll tell you, the vanilla that's considered bourbon vanilla is really not with bourbon.
Correct.
Right? That's the name of Reunion Bourbon. Something like that. So it's produced in, or Madagascar vanilla is produced in Madagascar.
Bourbon is produced in the Antilles. Which is basically Martinique, Guadeloupe, all those French islands. That's where they started making them.
So of those, you liked number
number
we tasted
one.
Three, and we did it blind so that we wouldn't be thrown by the country.
Correct.
So number one you liked was the Mexican vanilla.
I like the fact that they didn't hide the flavor of vanilla. Number three to me was my second favorite, but it was a little bit too sweet to my taste.
So now when you say hide the flavor, now all three of these ingredient-wise is
have
really...
alcohol.
Oh, I understand they have alcohol.
Right.
But really the only flavor you're getting, and it's only vanilla beans and alcohol. So the flavor hiding
what
is
I mean
really
by, okay, more,
the
more
wrong
intense,
way to look at it.
More intense.
Yeah.
Not hiding. More intense.
No, you're not hiding anything. It is
correct.
The flavor of that bean from that area
right,
because
right.
there's nothing else in it to hide the flavor.
That's, well, the alcohol.
That's my point.
The alcohol.
It's the same alcohol in all three.
Okay.
Then, so that's the point.
The
so
weakness.
You're tasting the difference from the regions of where the beans are grown.
So I like the Mexican bean.
Okay.
How's that?
KDO?
I liked number three.
Which is the Madagascar.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you like about that?
You know,
why the difference?
Right. Tasting through the three origins, I would say number two, which we haven't really talked about, had... a very distinct flavor, which wasn't bad by any means, but it was a little bit more fruity. It had kind of some cherry notes to it, which I thought was interesting. It was a little bit spicy. One also
warm spicy.
Warm spicy.
Yeah, warm spicy.
Like, like clovey, cinnamon.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It kind of almost reminded me of cherry pie in a funny way, which isn't bad, but in terms of when I think of, and again, I bake very little, so if I want that true vanilla flavor, three really brought that out for me. It tasted like vanilla. It tasted like a nice round vanilla. It was a little bit sweet. It wasn't bringing too many other characteristics into it, is what I thought.
And you, Tom?
And me, I was number two, so we're all over the map on this. I was blown away by the amount of flavor, number
yeah.
two,
right, right.
the roundness of the flavor, the fact that it was bringing all those other notes. And so it made me think, God, I have to look at the jar on this because I want to know what else is in there. And
it's the same as the rest.
It's the same as the rest. Water, alcohol, sugar, vanilla bean from Tahiti, right? So they
as are, a bean, as a bean, it is my favorite. Definitely my favorite flavor.
As a bean?
Yeah.
So we tested them against the bean, and it's obvious that it's going to be naturally that the bean is not going to taste the alcohol
character, right?
And so, but I just thought it was hands down the Tahitian for me.
Right.
From the, I went back, tasted them three times. I just liked the broadness of it. It was a mouthful of flavor.
Yeah, it certainly
and
was.
Whether or not I perceive that as true vanilla flavor, I think is my mistake.
Right.
When you taste a cherry note, it's the same thing when you're tasting wine.
Correct.
You taste notes. It's still a Cabernet grape.
Correct. Right?
But you taste notes of cherry or cigar from the wood or...
To me, it would be interesting if we were to do this again to get like just a plain whipped cream and add these to something just to see how it behaves once it's actually added.
I think yours. I think the Tahitian bean would win over all of them
because it's gonna you're gonna taste it more.
Exactly, yeah. You're gonna have more of a presence. You're gonna have that's gonna stay in there. I think the others are better to drink or to taste by themselves. But once you put them into baking, I think they will dissipate much more than the Tahitian vanilla bean.
Okay.
That's my take.
Looking forward to doing that, KDO,
I know,
when,
that's
when
a
you
great
make
idea.
The whipped cream next.
All right. Can't wait. I'm going to go pump some iron.
All right. Ready. Up next, what would you take home with you if you wanted to take home a gift from Seattle you're visiting this summer? Do you have any thoughts on that? Maybe you could go to our Facebook page, tell us what you would you think people should take home with them. But I'm curious. I have some ideas on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time to bring home the sand. If you're on vacation here in Seattle and you're listening to our show, which I'm sure you are,
then you're doing good.
People listen to our show all over the place. I was just in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And a guy came up to me at the farmer's market, and I mentioned this last week, but came up to me at the farmer's market and says, I recognize your voice, and I think I know what you look like. Are you Tom Douglas? Do you do the Seattle Kitchen Radio Show? And he listens to us every week in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. So,
and two people booked a trip from West Virginia with me going to Peru because they listen to the show every week.
Going to where?
Peru next year.
Really?
Yes, Machu Picchu.
Are you going to go cave exploring?
No, I think I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah, maybe not a good time for that these days.
Thank goodness all those kids got out of there.
I know, coach. Yeah. I'm very happy about that. Happy to hear
anyway,
about that.
Anyway, there's lots of people on cruise lines around our city right now, and I think there's always a question about when you're bringing home something from the cruise to Alaska, if you haven't got off the ship in Alaska to go get something.
That's true.
But a lot of people stop before or after their trip here in Seattle. What would you, KDO, what would you send people home with? By the way, I don't think I introduced. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O. I think it would depend on the person that I'm gifting to. Do they like sweets? Do they like savory things? I think that would really change it up. You know, honestly, Tom.
So in your world, it's only a food item.
It's only a food
it's
item.
It's not like, you know, Seattle's famous for glass art.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not toting around any like chihuly pieces or anything like that.
Seahawks.
What about a Tom Douglas cookbook?
Yeah.
Okay, but that's still food related. That's still food related.
That's definitely what I would be saying.
I would totally.
A jar of salmon rub?
Yes. Some cheeky message from Tom Douglas directly. I think people would like that very much. No, we have such a bounty of really delicious products here in our region that are actually quite difficult to get elsewhere that I think, why wouldn't you? I mean, I love food gifts myself personally.
I think that one of the greatest gifts is to not actually give it to them, but send it to them where they're going. Because if they're going to just be doing a step in Seattle and going back to Chicago or whatever, have them ship there for their goods so they don't have to worry about carrying the stuff. And it allows you to have a little better gift, I think, like a case of Rainier Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like so quite essential to our area. And when they're in prime time, it's a beautiful gift to give to somebody like 5 pounds of cherries and ship it to Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that crazy and that expensive. And you just... you know, just send it to them so they don't have to carry it around with them on the plane.
I think the other way to think about this, too, is that a lot of people are transplants to Seattle. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to go visit their families during the summertime.
Right.
And, you know, they want to take a little piece of their new home back to the fam, back to reunions and that sort of thing.
I have many times told my customer who said, oh, my God, where do you get this salmon? I go, just go down to Mutual Fish. Tell them you want to buy the best salmon they have and have them ship it to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. They'll do it. They'll put it in a box and they'll do it for you. You know, it's like you don't have to carry the salmon with you because it's not going to be the same salmon if you take it with you.
Plus, salmon, they'll put, you know, ice, you know, heavy ice packs,
correct,
blah, blah, blah. If you're doing something like a Washington wine, it's more difficult this time of year because while you can put an ice pack in, you're not...
it's hot.
Unless you do an overnight shipment, or same thing with French chocolates, for example.
Right.
That would be something I send to my mom all the time is French chocolates for Mother's Day or for Easter or something. But I send them in the cooler months because 95 degrees back there in the East Coast, that's going to be chocolate soup.
Yeah, certainly is.
Chocolate sauce.
Certainly is.
Where would you buy the cherries? I think a chef shop over there on Elliott has a cherry program that they ship cases of Washington cherries.
But, you know, you're here in Seattle. You go to Pike Place Market. You can buy 10 pounds of cherries, put them in a box.
No.
What do you mean no? And then go to FedEx and send it to yourself.
They're going to be mushed by that if you do that. They need to be packed properly.
Well, obviously packed properly, yes. Yeah. But... I mean, you can do it yourself, or you can have the people do it at the market. Somebody will do it.
Okay.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that if you go to Socios, they'll charge you, but they'll probably put it in a box for you and send it to you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, when you buy a gift like that, buy the whole box because you can share it with your neighbors. You can share it with your friend. It's a great tale of your trip. Oh, we were just in Seattle.
Yeah.
Check this out. Your whole neighborhood is going to love you. You bring him a beautiful gift of cherries and share with them.
Or put them up.
Oh, yeah,
do
exactly.
A little Merlot cherry or a little brandy cherry, and then you'll have them for the rest of the year, and you'll
That's
think
right.
about Seattle every time you're there.
That's right.
I think of a lot of people. I mean, there's plenty of people, obviously, that love to cook. And if they get a gift that's an ingredient, they'll go ahead and use that. I think sometimes you are seeing people that are maybe a little more timid in the kitchen. But I think an area where everyone gets excited is like a sweet treat. So, Tom, you mentioned the France chocolates. Theo chocolate is obviously super, super delicious. Hot cakes. Autumn Martin makes those really delicious portable hot cakes that you could just bake up for someone very easily. Molly Moons has a delicious hot fudge and sprinkles that you can buy. I mean, there's just
The Obama favorite coconut cream pie.
That's right. Although
That's a little harder to ship.
But all those other products that we just mentioned are easily packable in your suitcase. And I think anyone would be so happy to get a little amalgam of all those different brands.
And if it is too hot to ship Fran's chocolates, per se, she does make a beautiful chocolate sauce or a caramel sauce.
That's right.
And it would be lovely. Other things that I think about through the Pike Place Market, you know, some of my favorite things are the friand, the little cookie at...
Le Panier.
Yeah.
Those are nice.
Little cookie, that little kind of spongy cookie.
You know, we touched on the wine too, but there's also beer. We have a huge religion of microbrewery around here. So, you know, and the whole country looks at us in some ways towards that. So, you know, if you're a beer lover, that's another thing. You can ship a six-pack and... You know, be done by the time you get home. You'll have a nice six-pack waiting for you.
I would love if somebody sent, you know, somebody who's been to my house, say, and they're leaving, but they want to send a gift of a thank you gift. Say they stayed at your house for a week or something, and they want to give you something before they go, or a little taster pack of great coffees.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if you stayed at my house, you know I like more of a dark roast. I still love I still love Starbucks. I buy their espresso roast a lot. No, not the Pike blend. That's too for me. The espresso roast is what I buy. Or that, what's the name of that one? Ulcerone? Or, Torrefazione company. I can't remember. I buy that. Yeah. They're dark blend all the time. So,
what do you think?
But a little bit of a great coffee culture would be fun.
Of course. What do you think about some of the more traditional gifts from Seattle? The smoked salmon, almond roca, applets and cotlets. Those are always quite ubiquitous.
Of course.
I personally love applets and cotlets. I really can't stop eating them. They're just like these little jellies.
They're easy to eat.
Or chucker cherries, those kind of glazed cherries.
Great gift to bring back to your office.
Those won't melt.
they're firm enough.
Yeah, they're firm enough.
And we're also known for...
What was the first one you said?
Almond roca.
Almond roca would be hilarious. Having, you know, if you drove by the plant or
something. Right? Like, maybe a little tin of almond roca?
Hazelnut and walnuts. We're very well known for the Pacific Northwest to have such beautiful trees.
I think hazelnuts. A roasted hazelnut would be a good idea. Readily available in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you make a bunch of little packages, and those are great gifts, too, for... whoever's left at home when you go back home, and I think it's fabulous.
I would stay away from coffee cups and T-shirts.
Yeah.
You know,
because
to me,
it's not
that
made
is
here.
Not a very thoughtful gift.
It's just not made
unless
here.
Unless you're giving it to someone who really loves collecting either of those items.
Yeah,
they
maybe
feel
so.
They feel a little silly. Yeah. Get something
My mom collects those little plates from every city around the world.
See,
you know,
see?
I don't know what that
airports.
Is.
You know, when you go to the airport, they have those little round thing with the picture of Seattle.
Huh.
You know, standing on a little wood commemorative plates. She collects those. So
I'm in Uruguay.
I have the duty of like every airport I've been around the world to buy one of those.
That's very sweet, though. Everyone has their thing. But if you don't, food.
Exactly.
Food is a good one.
I go with food.
And don't forget, you get a present for yourself when you get home, which is always fun.
That's right.
You get a box if you ship it, right? It shows up maybe a day or two after your home. So, oh, my goodness, I get a little...
A nice bottle of Chardonnay from Eastern Washington and some smoked salmon. I'd be very happy to see that at my doorstep.
Absolutely. But don't buy the boxed smoked salmon. If you're going to buy preserved salmon, buy some canned. There's a sockeye salmon belly canned salmon out there that I love from Vital Choice. It's delicious.
Yeah, sounds good.
Good to know.
Up next, it's the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben from the Dahlia Bakery. And we're going to find out about ice creams and sorbets on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. It's time for Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben, pastry chef of the Dahlia Bakery. And it's that summertime jingle when we talk to listen for ice cubes and salt and all the things that go into a little
the humming of the ice machine.
The ice cream maker.
Yeah, machine. Ice cream maker, yes.
If you have a machine. Mm-hmm. So let's start there, Brittany Bartleben. Welcome.
Thank you.
I noticed today that you brought us nothing to eat.
I brought nothing. No.
It seems
I think you guys have been a little spoiled lately.
It's appropriate to have brought us a little ice cream and sorbet.
Yeah.
That melts.
Yeah, I didn't do that. Sorry.
It doesn't travel well.
Well, this is going to go well, huh?
It's a long walk across the street.
Really. We just at the farm when I was there this last week over the 4th made some salted vanilla bean ice cream.
Ooh.
With the farm eggs. Uh-huh. It was so yellow and beautiful.
Yeah.
And tasty. And we used some of that Nielsen Massey vanilla bean paste.
Good stuff. Yeah.
Really good stuff. And by the way, we did a vanilla tasting here before you got here.
What are the results?
Across the board. I liked, which is probably the important one.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Since I have to buy it.
Yeah, tell me what you liked.
I liked a Tahitian vanilla extract.
Yes,
the best.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So they're over there if you want to get a tasting sample.
Absolutely.
In,
yeah.
Before you go. Anyway, I really like that vanilla. I like it in Fran's chocolates when she does the salted caramels,
yes.
Right? The caramels made out of the sugar and cream and vanilla, probably. But that one, that came through, and we made this ice cream. And salt is a beautiful thing with desserts and in ice creams. I think it's counterintuitive. People don't think about it.
Yeah, it's funny. This is not off topic, but I put a strawberry tart on the menu at the Dahlia, and it was delicious, but there was just like something missing. Mm-hmm. And we just sprinkled a little Jacobson flake salt over it, and there it was. So many times, that's all anything needs.
Right.
And you need salt in ice cream, otherwise it's completely flat tasting.
So salt is always in ice cream?
Yes,
generally?
I've never not put salt in ice cream. You don't put a ton.
Yeah.
You know, if you're making a quart, you put, you know, half teaspoon to a teaspoon
in
there.
Same as in cake and baking. Yes. I mean, you use use salt in a lot of things in baking.
And you notice it right away if you forgot it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like this for some reason isn't good. Mm. You can't put your finger on
just
it.
Just to not get off track, but do you think chefs use too much salt?
Sometimes.
I mean,
yes.
When I go home sometimes after a fancy dinner, like I did last
night. You don't feel
night,
well. Yeah.
It's not that I don't feel well. I just feel parched.
Parched, a little bloated.
Like,
yeah.
Especially when you wake up, say, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're you just can't. And you feel bloated, too.
Yes.
And that's, I think sometimes we use too much salt.
What do you think that's attributed to in terms of cooks? Is it because, like, their palate is maybe overrun with salt, and so for it to be more perceptible, they put more in, or is it just habitual? They're throwing salt
in? I think it's habitual, and, you know, they're in a hurry. It's got a season, and the pinches start getting fatter and fatter.
I think it's because they're not testing the food at the last minute before it leaves.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if you taste, let's say you're a cook, you've made 150 dishes today, maybe 200. As you taste throughout the evening, you get desensitized to the salt.
Yeah, no, of course, of course.
All right, back to ice
cream. So not having anything to do with ice cream, but
totally.
So back to ice cream. I used one of those
tabletop.
Yeah,
Cuisinart.
We put the container in the freezer, right? And it's not a Cuisinart. Well, maybe it is a Cuisinart now. The original brand was not called Cuisinart, but it was a Cuisinart, and it sends it around. You pull it out of the freezer. You put your custard in, and it's just the simplest.
It makes lovely ice cream
too.
There's nothing wrong with that ice cream. And they're not super expensive these days. I first bought my own in 1999, and it was $50, and I was like, "Wow!"
I still think they're $50.
I think they're still $50.
Yeah,
so
but that's not the same $50.
It's that was a while ago.
20 years later.
Here's the thing that people kind of screw up with those is they think they can cheat on how long they freeze the bowl.
Yeah.
That is a hard rule. You have to freeze it overnight, 12 hours at least. They'll throw it in the freezer for 4-ish hours and wonder why their ice cream doesn't freeze all the way. So that is one you really got to stick to. And that applies to the mixer ones as well. You can buy mixer attachments for your KitchenAid. Same thing. You got to freeze the bowl solid.
Same with the PacoJet.
PacoJet, yep. But yeah, those make really, really great ice creams. And I really think if you want to make ice cream at home, you should invest in one. You don't need one per se. You could also make a semifreddo if you don't have an ice cream machine and don't want to buy one.
Just put everything on the cookie sheet in the freezer and every 10 minutes just go in there.
That granita, with a semifreddo, it's the exact same ingredients, eggs, milk, cream, sugar. Mm-hmm. It's just the method that you're tinkering with.
Right.
You're cooking your sugar and adding it to your eggs as you whip. And then you take your cream and you whip that and fold it all together. Mm-hmm. So you're incorporating your air on your own by hand, basically.
Instead of through the ice cream.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But it makes a really nice scoop. Mm-hmm. With ice creams, water is your not your friend.
Right.
So, yeah, you're going to get ice crystals. It takes about 30 minutes at home to churn ice cream, whereas in our commercial mixers at or ice cream machines at work, we're talking 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. So the faster you can get your ice cream in frozen. The freezer and frozen, the better the chances are of it being smooth and delicious.
So I always want to make strawberry or raspberry or blueberry. How do we get it so that the water from the fruit doesn't affect the texture, like crystallizing
the
ice cream?
You're going to want to cook that fruit down and get some of that water out of there.
That, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately you do.
Uh-huh.
And make just a nice, tight compote. Cook it until – and it'll enhance the flavor of the fruit. And then I personally – I like to swirl the compote into the ice cream as I've pulled it off the machine rather than mixing it all together. I think you're going to get a more concentrated fruit flavor, and you're going to get that nice juxtaposition of the beautiful vanilla flavor or sweet cream mixed with the really intense fruit flavor.
So what happens if you – well, I guess freeze-drying is not really an option at home, but what happens if you dehydrate your fruit instead? Because I love the idea of fresh berries rather than cooked berries.
Yeah.
Is there a way to? Is
I'm
that,
sure
does that work?
Yeah, I've never tried it, but I'm sure that would work.
Well, you can do fresh berries. Just you have to eat the ice cream the same day.
You just can't put it.
You
back
can't
in
hold
the
it back in the
exactly.
freezer because that's when the crystallization is going to happen. But if you just make ice cream in an afternoon, you go pick some berries in the morning. You make the ice cream in the afternoon with your bowl that's been, you know, premeditated into the freezer ahead of time. It's not an issue. If you can use fresh puree right there. But if you're going to keep it overnight and longer in the freezer, then the crystallization happens.
Yeah, exactly.
What
yeah.
about when the ice cream gets fatty? You know what I mean? When the fat's kind of separated. Is that over-churning?
That's over-churning. That is that's often a common mistake as well at home is because people think when they put their ice cream on the machine, it will turn into like the hard pack ice cream that we see in the grocery store. It's going to be more like the DQ soft serve. That's when you pull it off the machine.
And that's an important detail.
That is very important detail. Yeah. And then you're going to freeze it solid.
What's DQ?
Dairy Queen.
Oh, yes, of course.
I was
trying to be really quick on that. DQ.
He doesn't know about blizzards. Blizzards and dip codes.
No peanut butter parfait.
I had a Butterfinger blizzard on the way to the farm the other day. It was pretty darn good.
I bet it was delicious.
I stopped at Dairy Queen once because my wife told me to. She was with me and she says, oh, let's get some ice cream. I'm like, but where are we going to get ice cream? I don't see any ice cream shop. She goes, oh, Dairy Queen. I'm like, really? So we went there and we had
the... At least it has dairy in it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Let's switch over to sorbets.
Yes.
Is there, what's the big difference between making ice cream and making sorbet?
Method, as far as how you churn it, nothing.
Okay.
Sorbet obviously just doesn't have any dairy in it. Mm-hmm. It's you start with a simple syrup, and that's going to be equal parts sugar and water. And a good rule of thumb is going to be equal parts by volume simple syrup to fresh fruit puree.
And so if you have a half a cup of mangoes, a cup of mangoes or a pound of mangoes cut up, you want a pound of simple syrup.
It's by volume. So you're going to want to puree that mango and say you've got 12 fluid ounces.
Okay.
You want 12 fluid ounces of simple syrup. And professional bakers, we use something called a refractometer, and that's where we test the bricks. And that basically measures the sugar density. Too much sugar, and it's not going to freeze. Not enough, and you're gonna break your arm trying to scoop it. Home cooks aren't going to want to buy one of these.
Yes.
So what a home cook can do is the egg test, and that's where you wash your egg, a fresh egg, and then just drop it in your sorbet base, and if it should come to the surface and be about the size of a quarter.
Of the shell showing.
Right, exactly.
That's how you know the density of your water.
Your water's right on.
That's in your whole mix or just the simple syrup?
In the whole mix. And you can add more water or you can add more fruit puree. And then from there you taste it. And lemon juice, whatever you need to do to tame that sugar or get it to how you want it to be. I also highly recommend citric acid. You can get that at any spice store.
And if you don't have any when you're making your sorbet, just use a little lemon juice.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you don't want to add any liquid.
Oh, yeah.
We call citric acid pastry chef salt.
Right.
It's a really great thing to brighten things up without adding any liquid.
Yeah.
Now, any fruit, it's exactly the same recipe. I could do cantaloupe that way. I could do mangoes. I could do strawberries.
It's a good, yes, it's going to be a good base recipe. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you'll probably, depending on the sweetness of your fruit, you'll need to adjust with whatever acids or, citric acid you want to add.
And
to
additives
it.
Like fresh herbs, they don't mess anything up.
It's delicious. Mm-hmm. A little bit of alcohol is also a good idea. Alcohol doesn't freeze, so it helps for a little bit of a softer sorbet, mm-hmm. even if it's just flavorless vodka, but why would you do that? A little amaretto and a peach mm-hmm. sorbet or something would be delicious.
Let's talk about flavor combinations.
Yeah. I don't know that we have time. Let's just do a couple flavors.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Ice cream.
I really love to do a snickerdoodle ice cream. That's one of my favorite mix-ins, too. So you're going to make a cinnamon ice cream. Just mm-hmm. infuse your dairy with some cinnamon sticks, and then just take some cinnamon or snickerdoodle cookies, fold those in. They soften a little bit in the ice cream. It's just delicious.
We're going to get one only. A snickerdoodle ice cream.
In the summer when fruit is everywhere, that's what I'm going for.
Okay, perfect.
I love that. Forget all those fruits.
Yeah, up next is Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio. 97.3 FM. Ooh, you're still with us. It's 2 hours later, and it's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. We're thankful for your patronage of our show.
That's right.
I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Jerry Rowe, two-year-old the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And Tom, you said you were going to win today.
Well, I just said I was feeling it.
Okay.
You're feeling like a win is a big thing.
Well, you've said that before. I'm going to win. I'm going to kick some butt.
And that's when I
today you're a little
win.
Bit more tame on the...
Today I'm just feeling it.
I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge, you guys. Here's how the game's played. Though you know, you get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least amount correct is the big fat loser. And they have to give something away to our wonderful listener. Today you're playing for Debbie Royer. She was kind enough to participate in our live Facebook video earlier today when we were tasting vanilla. So, Tom, should you lose, what will you give away to Debbie?
I'm going to give Debbie a coconut cream pie seasoned with Tahitian vanilla.
Oh. Whoa.
That sounds cool.
A whole pie.
Nice. Chef Thierry.
I'm going to give her brunch for two where she can actually try our bread pudding that has Tahitian vanilla in it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Brunch for two at Luke or Lule?
Luke.
Luke. All right. Miss Katie.
I am not going to go vanilla themed like these two fine chefs. How about a little happy hour for two at the Palace Kitchen? You can never go wrong with that. What do you say, Tom? $50 value?
Sure. Make it $100. Bring a friend.
Oh, hey. That's a lot of martini. Have fun.
Right. All right. Debbie will be a winner no matter what.
That's right.
I was having happy hour at the at the Palace, I would be having our smoky chicken wings.
Uh-huh. Classic.
Bone in. And I would be having some pleen, a little small order of pleen. Mm.
I go large on the pleen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can never have too much of that.
All right, who would like to go first today?
Also.
Chef Terry, how did pound cake get its name? Was it because it called for a pound of butter, a pound of eggs, a pound of sugar, and a pound of flour in order to make it originally? Is it because if you make it correctly, it weighs exactly 1 pound? Or is it because it was originally created in England and all the ingredients cost 1 pound?
Not the last one for sure. This is a trick question. I know the 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound, but that does not make sense for a home cook to have a 4 pound cake. So I'm going to go with number two.
I'm sorry, Terry. The answer is actually that the pound cake got its name from its original recipe, which called for a pound each of butter, egg, sugar, and flour.
Yep.
Who knew?
I actually make it all the time. I did too, but it sounds like the original of it would have been wrong for making a 4 pound cake.
Chef Thierry,
yes.
True or false, apples belong to the Rose family?
Yes, it is.
All right. Correct. All right, Chef Thierry, question number three for you. In what country would you be most likely to find durian in the market? Iran, Indonesia, or Italy?
Indonesia.
Correct. To correct one incorrect, Chef, in which country was the ice cream cone invented? The United States, China, Italy, or Spain?
The United States.
Correct. Very good, Chef. One more question for you. From which type of flower does a vanilla pod come?
What's that flower? The not the lily. The, what do you call that? That family. Looks like yes, but no. I know. I'm just trying to remember the actual name.
You can say it in French if that's easier.
No, it's the name I can't remember.
Okay, Chef. This is only a 2-hour show.
It's from the lily family.
I think that's his final answer.
Right. Yeah, we're looking for orchids.
Orchids.
Orchid.
Oh,
I know. That's frustrating.
I was totally
three
missing
that. Correct, two incorrect. That is still a very valiant showing there.
The last one was I was incorrect, but I actually knew it.
Right. So it's that's where still you don't so get anything. Wrong.
Give me a break. You had like 20 minutes.
No, I knew it. I just couldn't come up with it.
Okay, that doesn't count. So we're going to go ahead and move on. Katie, it's your turn. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
If you pour alcohol over a dish and then ignite it, what are you doing?
You're flambeing it.
You certainly are. Good job. Katie, how many standard 750 milliliter bottles of wine would fit in a
Methuselah?
Methuselah.
Methuselah.
In a Methuselah.
That's a big one, those Methuselahs. Is it six?
Is that your final answer?
She
said it 14 times.
The answer is 8. You're close.
I wouldn't have a clue.
Katie, which came first, McDonald's or Kentucky Fried Chicken?
The chicken or the burger? I don't know the answer, but I'm going to go with McDonald's.
Correct. The first McDonald's opened in 1940. KFC franchises opened in 1952.
Okay.
Job. Who knew? Katie, what utensil is recommended for stirring to dissolve sugar over heat? A metal or a wooden spoon?
Oh, I would think a wooden spoon.
Answer is actually a metal spoon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, what do I know about
wooden also?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tom.
Katie, your last question. What is it called when you soak fruit in sweet liquid or alcohol to absorb flavors? Macerate, poach, stew, or drench?
Macerate. Maceration.
Correct. Katie, that is also 3-for-3. You tied with Thierry over here.
Uh-huh. Sure did.
Tom, you need to get more than 3 correct to
pick
win
up,
today.
Pick it up
and
the
he's,
rear.
He's feeling it today. So
I did that math. All right, Chef Tom Douglas, how hot should the water be when poaching? Boiling or at a simmer?
Simmer.
Correct. Which of these foods might you poach in white wine? Eggs, fish, or poultry?
Well, you could do any of them in white wine, but I think more commonly it's fish.
Correct. That's what we were looking for over here. Tom, what is the most consumed root vegetable in the United States?
Carrots.
Potatoes. Tom, which are larger, sea scallops or bay scallops?
Sea scallops.
Correct. Chef Tom Douglas, your last question. What are purple calabash, pineapple, and great white?
Oh, the only thing I can think of is sage for some reason, because I know there's pineapple sage, but I don't know what great white would be, but I'm going to go with sage.
They are heirloom tomato varieties. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Holy mama.
Interestingly, I don't know if this ever has happened. We have a 3-way tie.
Of
each
course
of you
happened,
got
a
3-way.
3-way tie. Right. How do you want to...
Just do a question. First one down.
You're just going to yell it out?
Sean can...
Are you going to hit the table?
Yeah.
Okay. What eventually results if a cook over whips cream?
Terry. Butter.
All right, so Chef Terry is now the winner. Tom, now what do we do with this tiebreaker?
We've got two losers here, Katie being the biggest loser since her deal was worth $100. My loser is only worth $40.
Oh, I thought you meant in size, and then I'd be like, you're the biggest loser.
Well, you can look at it any way you want, but
you can.
You're a loser, and we are losers.
We are losers.
Debbie Royer is going to get pie and happy hour at the Palace Kitchen. If you want to be part of our show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us, of course, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Tina Noah at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.